Let me welcome Anna David from Poland, from the University of Warsaw, who's also a member of the, what is the full name, of the Barcelona Institute of Science and Technology. And she will tell us what influence functions can do and how to use them to interpret neural networks in the context of physical phase transitions. So thanks a lot. Go ahead, please.
Exactly. So thanks a lot for having me here again, Roger and Sebastian. And so this is exactly what I'm going to show you. So this is a result of our project that we do in the team of both University of Warsaw and ICWO, Institute of Photonic Sciences in Barcelona. So the main idea is by Dr. Alexandre Feu here. And with numerics, Patrick Wimbeli helped me a lot, and it was done under supervision of both Michał Toms and Maciek Lewenstein. So first, I will just give you a broad overview of what the talk will be about. So as we know, quantum many-body systems can exhibit different behaviors depending on the internal and external parameters, so they can come in different phases. And people have used machine learning algorithms to detect these phases in quantum many-body systems. So, and where we come is we answer the question, how does machine learning algorithms do it? In a sense, what patterns they find important for the phase detection? And to show you how we try to answer this question, this is the outline of the talk. I will start with the introduction to the machine learning, especially in the context of phase classification, which will provide the aim of and the motivation for our work. And then I will talk about interpretability of machine learning, so a quality that we want to add to this field. And we follow successes of the interpretability field in machine learning community. So then I will present you the machine learning model we use and the physical model on which we train our machine learning model. And finally, I will present you the results. That should be like one of the steps of understanding what machine learns in the phase classification problem. So starting from the beginning. So phase classification is at heart of the quantum many-body physics, which, as we know, can be very problematic to simulate numerically due to the exponential growth of complexity along with the numbers of constituents encoded in that. And but the goal is usually to find an order parameter. So when you know that, you can exactly describe the difference of the behaviors between two phases. And it's not always true. Well, it's rarely trivial, and it's especially difficult for systems that interact strongly or ones that exhibit many-body localization, models. So what we want to do here, so we take a state that's from a high-dimensional Hilbert space, and we want to assign a phase, actually a single number here. So this is a very complicated mapping, and we can, and some, and people guessed correctly that maybe a good tool to do that would be machine learning algorithms that are exactly, that are really good at analyzing high-dimensional data. So the broad definition of this field would be that it studies the algorithms whose performance improves with data. So it mimics our humans learning from experience. So you have some set of data which has some patterns inside. You put it to your magical machine, black box usually, and it processes data somehow and gives you the model which is ready to process new unknown data and give you some data. And there are three, broadly speaking, types of machine learning schemes. So first of all is a supervised one, and Maybe it's the most common one in face classification. And it consists in machine learning on pairs of input and output data. So here you would provide the machine with the quantum states of quantum many-body system, for example, along with the phases this state belongs to. So you have to first process the data, understand the data, and give this give ready to process the, to the machine. The other scheme is the unsupervised one. So you don't give any labels. You don't say nothing about which phase the state belongs to. And it tries to group the data based on some notion of similarity it gets from the training. And finally, there is the scheme, the reinforcement learning, that's I think not maybe used in face classification problems, but it's very famous, for example, in game AI. So there are programs that learn to react to environments. So they have some long-term goal and long-term reward. It's very interesting. But within this talk, I will focus on supervised scheme, because for this scheme, the influence function tool was designed. However, we have some reasons to believe that it should be also useful for unsupervised schemes, but we are working on that so right now. Okay, so just really a quick explanation of what supervised machine learning is. So it always consists in at least two stages. First is the training, then is the testing point. So the training you provide with data that you already labeled. So example, pictures of apples and bananas with according labels. And then the model trains on this data by minimizing a loss function. And the loss function can be any function that grows when the label is predicted by the machine wrongly, and goes down when the prediction is correct. So, and it changes its internal parameters to minimize this loss function. And when it arrives to the minimum, we say that the machine is trained. It should predict the at least this training data correctly. And it arrived to some set of parameters that I call theta here. And then when we have this model, the trained model with the parameters theta, we then go to the testing phase. We input unknown data, like rotten banana, and the model apply its parameters to this picture, and then give you an output. And if the on the testing phase it sees the bananas as bananas and apples as apples, then you can say, okay, that the training went smoothly and the machine can now correctly predict unseen images. So just to recap, the training is when you have a model. This model initialized with some random parameters. It applies on input data and gives you a predicted output. You compare it to the true labels via loss function, and the model then changes its parameters in the direction that corresponds to the minimizing of a loss function. And this is the loop that you do during the training. And exactly these algorithms, this is actually a supervised scheme, but also unsupervised schemes, are used for face classification. I think these two papers will be like the one that were seminal works that kind of started the field 3 years ago. And they gave a kick to many, 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 many research papers. And they concerned both quantum models, classical models. They was unsupervised schemes, supervised schemes, and really plethora of approaches was tested in the face classification problem. However, with all the power of this approach, it enabled so far only the recovery of known phase diagrams. And the agreement with the more conventional approaches was mostly qualitative. So sometimes it predicted the phase transitions in the wrong place. And however, all this was achieved at much lower computational cost. So I don't believe we should discard this tool too fast, because its numerical power cannot be really denied. However, we should do something with this predictive power, right? And also, apart from the problem that so far it was just about recovering the new known results, there are open problems of machine learning and face classification. So, for example, it has some problems with quantum many-body localization. So predictions of the trained machines they show disagreement with thoroughly calculated critical exponents. And also it was shown that the training is pretty sensitive to hyperparameters describing the training process, like how long do you train and how exactly architecture you build, which in theory shouldn't really impact your results too strongly. Because if it affects them strongly, it means that something you did wrong with the training. And with the topological phases of matter, it's even worse. So I think so far no one was able to train on the raw data and detect topological phases. And always some kind of pre-engineering of features was needed. So here we are, our aim and motivation. If we can answer this question, what machine learns in the face classification problem, then first of all, maybe we can detect some new physics, because when it turns out that it learns something else than other parameter that we expect it to learn, then maybe it's not a necessarily accidental correlation noise or background. It's maybe something new and novel physics that we didn't see in this model before. However, it can be also accidental correlation, and then you know that your training was bad or your network learned something stupid. So this is also an important thing to know. And the other answer is that it can correct the next other parameter, and then great is great. This tool I will describe you soon is a way of confirming that, and it's a very universal tool. So this is thing that to have in mind. And then if you have such a way of looking into inside of the machine, you can say you can first say why maybe it doesn't work in many-body localization problems, why it doesn't work in topological models. And again, maybe see this new results apart from confirming what we already know. But to have it, we need this interpretability quality. So far it was visible in community of a machine learning scientist. Has already noticed the problem several years ago. So first of all, it's really nicely visible on the image recognition problems. It turned out that the network that was trained at predicting unknown images gets it completely wrong after some unnoticeable for humans changes of the images or changes of the background. And it would mean that probably the network learns something not important in the human understanding, or it learned the background, which it cannot maybe generalize well. Also, it was shown that neural networks inherit biases from humans that prepare the data. And we don't know that, especially that it would correspond to this pre-engineered. I mean, it can be also happen in physics when we kind of pre-engineer the features of, when we provide the data to the machine, and then we put there some assumptions. And part of them is put consciously, and part can be put unconsciously. So this is all stuff that should also be important to us physicists. So some definitions. So what I want to state that so far most of the very complex machine learning algorithms are black boxes. So they have their internal logic is hidden from the user, and in this case it's not that they are hidden that you cannot access them, but there's so big numbers of. So just big number of numbers inside of this model that you can follow all the mathematical mappings, but you don't really know to what human reasoning it corresponds to. So the lacking quality is interpretability. So the ability to explain or to present in understandable to a human terms. And this is the quality we want to add to the models, and not only us. Like, there's a booming field of machine learning interpretability that is designing methods to do that. We want that especially that there is a known trade-off between complexity of the model and how interpretable it is. And the most complex models, so neural networks, they are the most powerful in the many complex problems, but they are also worst when it comes to interpretability. And there are also less complex and more interpretable models which we can address, but we really like to use the power of neural networks, but the question is how to interpret them. And this is the slide that the slide I already showed. So when we enter with the question how the machine learning learns to detect phases in the quantum many-body system, the answer we pose is inference functions. And it's an interpretability tool, being an approximation of something known in literature for a very long time. So that it's called leave one out training. And be with me for a second, because it describes the mechanism of the inference functions, and I think it's a good slide to remember for the result description. So imagine you train your model. It can be any model you want, but we do it with neural networks. So when I say train, it's you look for the minimum, right, of the loss function that is built for n training points. So you have a data set of n training points, and you find some minimum corresponding to the parameters of the trained machine. Okay, and this is nice. And then you give the trained machine one test point, and it makes a prediction. And you have this, you leave this prediction in mind. You have it in mind. And then imagine that you retrain your model starting from the same minimum, because it's a very non-convex problem. So you retrain it, but first you remove one training point from your n training points dataset. So now you have one less training point, and you give this exactly the same test point to the machine. And what can happen? So there are two options basically. Either your machine now is less certain about this prediction, so the test loss goes up, and this would correspond to the fact that you removed a helpful training example. So because after removal, machine gets more certain about this prediction. And the opposite can happen. So after removal, your test loss goes down, so the machine is more certain about this same prediction. So the example we removed was harmful. So with this reasoning, you can understand what points your model regards as similar. And with this, you can guess the pattern that governs the machine when doing the reasoning process. The problem with this, exactly this setup, is that the retraining over for every training point and for every test point is super expensive. So what was done already in the 70s, the inference functions was derived. So it's analytical approximation for this leave one out training. So it consists in approximating this minimum that we are with Taylor expansion. And then when you look at the minimum and you approximate it quadratically, you can by judging curvature in the different directions, you can guess how the test loss of the single prediction would change after removal of the single training point. And by this, they derive this inference function value that says how influential the single training point is for a single prediction. And that's all. But here is the trick that you see. So you need to calculate the inverse of the Hessian for in this minimum. And to do that, the problem, your minimum, your problem has to be strictly convex. And we do know that our machine learning models have a very highly non-convex landscapes. So the generalization to this, to such models was done by Koh and Liang 3 years ago. This suggestion and application in machine learning earned them the international the best papers or international conference of machine learning 3 years ago. So it was also a highly influential paper in the machine learning community. And example of how they used it is this paper. Is this plot from the paper, and they showed the difference, I mean, that we can grasp with this tool. So this is the support vector machine, and this is very complex neural network. So this row corresponds to this support vector machines, and this for neural network. And this, and they, the two models were trained on the same training data, and they were given this test image for to predict the class for. So both models predicted correctly that this this image shows fish, but two of the most influential points for of the training points for this prediction for the support vector machines were some aquatic creatures, while for this complex neural network, there were exactly two pictures of the clownfish with the same or similar background. So it shows that with this tool, they argue that we can see that the neural networks learn some more complex features that are very much more correlated to the single picture, while support vector machines here, they just learn some kind of maybe color, maybe because the actually colors are here pretty similar. So this is a way of checking whether how well your model is trained, right? And whether you can trust it. And this interpretability element was is already looked for by physicists also in face classification problems for some time. But what we'd like to like add to this field is the fact that our tool is pretty universal. So there were really nice works done on the subject, and including one by Sebastian here, who where they find the way of formulating explicitly from the machine learning predictions the order parameter formula. But most of these papers are either really restricted to the model, the machine learning model architecture they use, or they use really small neural networks that are very shallow, like one layer, and then they look look at the parameters of the network, and still it can be set. And when there is not such a great amount of parameters, you can say something about the features. Exactly what we want to add here is to have a tool that maybe doesn't give you an order parameter explicitly, but can guide you in the search of one, and it's universal, independent of the machine learning model and the physical model. So to say that, okay, so now I will move, you already know how our tool, interpretability tool works. Now I will briefly describe the machine learning model we used. However, as I told you, it's it's not restricted to this specific model, but I put it as a part of introduction because I'd like to say really briefly about types of layers that we use. So this is a one-dimensional convolutional neural network, convolutional because it uses it has inside the convolution layers. Apart from that, every convolution layer is followed by max pooling. And in the last part, we have a global average pooling layer. And in the end, we have the fully connected layer. And I will, in a moment, I will say briefly about all these types of layers. So what we input is just a quantum state that we got from exadiagonalization of our physical model that I will describe in a moment. And as an output, we get two or three probabilities, depending on what we ask, but we usually ask about two phases. So there will be two probabilities that this input state belongs to one of two phases. So just to go really briefly through the layers. So the fully connected one is a very basic one. It's a building block of the neural network. So it just takes the inputs, multiplies them by weights, you sum it up, and on the results you apply the step function. And the step function in our case is just rectified linear unit. So it takes either positive value of the sum or it zeros it. So this is just it. Now the convolution layers. This is just a discrete convolution, and the filter is this this matrix is sliding over the image. This yellow one, and it has this yellow matrix has red elements. So these are elements of the filter that multiplies the corresponding elements of the whole image. You sum it up, and you get the convolved feature, convolved image. And the important part here is that elements of the filter, these red elements, these are the parameters that are being varied during the training. So this is the ones that are being modified to find the minimum of the training loss. Pooling layers are super simple. So you just define the range, the size of your layer, and max pooling takes the biggest value out of from your range that you choose. And average pooling just averages all this element out. And their, I think their main role is the fact that they just really brings the resolution of the image down, so they make it smaller. And that's it. So we don't use any new, any complex. So this is just some pretty simple in the end mapping. But if you just follow the numbers, you probably won't see what's going on. So, okay, so now you know the two influence functions. Now you know the machine learning model we used. Before I go to the result, just let's say for a second, what physical model with faces we tackle. And the model we chose is a one-dimensional spinless Fermi-Hubbard model, half-filling. It's on one hand fundamental, and on the other, very well studied. So the phases are known, and we can compare whether the results of influence function give you what we would expect. So ongoing research is on less known models, definitely. So what we have here, we have a hopping part. We have the nearest neighbor interaction between the spinless fermions, and we have next nearest neighbor interaction between them. We solved this we analyzed the one-dimensional chain with 12 sites. We do the exact diagonalization, and these eigenfunctions presented in fog basis are exactly what we input to the machine. I will comment later, what this fixed gauge is, but basically we fix the global sign of the wave function, but I will show you why it's important later, in like the last slide. Okay, so the phase diagram of this model is such that the uniform phase here is looking a liquid. When you increase the nearest neighbor interaction, you switch to the charge density wave one, it's characterized by the 1010 pattern of a density of Fermi occupancy. If you increase the next nearest neighbor interaction, you go to finally to the charge density wave two, which has a similar behavior as charge density with pattern 110011. But on the way you cross the bond order that it's characterized by the staggering of effective hopping between sites. So as I said, these are order parameters describing these transitions. What is important that, and it will be shown later, that these phases, the bond order and charge density wave two, it turned out they coexist for some range of parameters. So it also impacts the predictions of the machine. Okay, so and final slide with the methods. What a machine gets is exactly this one dimensional vector eigenfunction expressed in the fog basis. So not no special treatment is done here, along with the label, whether the state belongs to zero to phase zero, like looking at the liquid, or the phase one, that means charge density wave one, for example. Okay, so with all this, you know the rule. So we have influence functions that we apply on the convolutional neural network, trained to recognize phases in spinless one-dimensional Fermi-Hubbard model.
So I have a question about the labels.
Yeah.
Why are they just two, whereas we show different phases?
Sorry, again?
I mean, why your labels are just two, whereas you have these two charge density wave phase?
Yeah, this was just an example. So that it depends on the setup. So because in the first, we have a few setups that we study. So these arrows show that. So here we cross just two phases, and that's why we have two labels. Mm-hmm. And this example is more specific, so I will comment it later. But basically, it was just an example. So yeah, you definitely can give free labels. So this is, of course, no problem. Okay, so with the setups, as I said a moment ago, we have three setups. But before we, and there are like different transition lines through the different cuts through the phase diagram. But let's start with the description of what we're going to see in the figure, because we're going to see series of figures like this. And let's focus for a second what it's going to show. So this point here are just training examples. And the purple ones here, they are coming from the phase one. So, I mean, one of the phases that are being researched here, while these training examples are from phase zero. And I will tell you what is phase zero, what is phase one. And their value is the influence function value. So how influential they are for a given prediction that is being analyzed right now. So this symbolizes the test point that for which machine makes a prediction. So this test point, for example, is in the same phase as this training points, and the green points are they mark the training examples that are most helpful training examples for this prediction, while these ones are the most harmful training examples for analyzed prediction. And the difference in the background colors indicates the transition point that we fixed for the, yeah, so this is it. So this would be the meaning of the series of figures, and now let's talk about them. So first setup.
Anna, can you help me understand the last plot again? So one of these points in the plot, does it represent an average over multiple training samples, or is it just one?
No, so exactly, we have like 1,000 training points here, and this influence function is for a single prediction.
Yeah.
You're gonna see different patterns, whether your test point is here or here or here.
Yeah. So what I don't understand is, so in order to train a good machine learning model to get an accurate decision boundary, you need points from both sides of the decision boundary as, mm-hmm. as close as possible, as accurate as possible. Mm-hmm. Like, these are the hardest training samples to learn, to distinguish in what phase you are in. And so I would expect from that plot that at the transition point, that examples from both sides are helpful, instead of ones are helpful and the others are harmful.
Mm-hmm.
Do you understand?
Yeah, Yeah, I know what you mean. And my counter argument would be that from the perspective, so the influence function is kind of a, gives a kind of a notion of similarity, right? So this ones and all this points are, so yes, so the, okay. First of all, you put you gave a really good argument. So that uniqueness of the data and the uniqueness of the data at the transition point are, is the biggest, plays a role. However, if you think about this data, so these trading points are so close to the transition point, and they are actually very similar, still similar to this prediction, because they are super close to the phase zero. But they are already labeled differently, so they're kind of messing up with the but yes, you will always I think it's this makes sense. So it's not that I'm not claiming that influence function shows you that if you remove all these examples, the machine will work better. I'm saying that this shows you that this single training points are harmful in a sense that they are the most similar, but they have different label. So this would be
okay, yeah. Okay, sure. Thanks.
Okay, good. Okay, so the transition line we study here, it's a crossing between Luttinger liquid to charge density wave one phase. And we have, for now, let's just take, this is a zero next nearest neighbor interaction. So it's just a transition for this zero here, and it's a very, very simple one that it's being described by the order parameter being the average difference between the densities of the occupancy. Yeah, I may have messed something up between the neighboring sites, and it's zero. It should be perfectly zero in Luttinger liquid, and then go slowly growing to one in the charge density wave one regime. This is the plot of our order parameter in our setup, but just take care, this is logarithmic scale. And you see it's not perfectly zero here. It's very slowly going up. And it is numerical reasons that I will be happy to discuss afterwards. But this is why we see behavior I will talk in a moment. Okay, so now let's look at this plot. So these are influence function values of all trading points for the different four different predictions. One is deeply in the phase, in the Luttinger liquid phase. This one is like in the middle. Actually, we were looking at that during the description of the figure. The other one is on the phase in the charge density wave one phase, but closer to the transition point. And one is deep in the charge density wave one phase. And if machine, and let's try to figure with me, if the model learns something correlated to the order parameter, so the prediction here has a zero order parameter, so the test state here has a zero order parameter, and all the states from the Luttinger liquid has a similarly zero order parameter, that means that they should be similarly influential. All these test states, training states, sorry, should be similarly influential for this test point. And this is what we see with the two twists inside. So first twist is coming from the fact that if you look really closely, it's not perfectly constant, especially here. And this is due to these numerical reasons that, that I will maybe talk later if I have time. But then I promise there are you don't cheat there. And the second twist is what actually already Sebastian remarked. So the influence function first show stuff that's similar to the prediction, but they also tend to the ones that are the most unique in the set. And also this actually, they do provide more data than the ones deep into the phases. So this is what we would expect, and this behavior should kind of increase our trust in the model, in the machine learning model. And if we go to the other phase, then if it learns order parameter or something correlated to that, we should have the most similar states should be the one nearby the prediction, right? Because they have similar order parameter. to the test set. With this twist that they're preferred ones more on the left because they are closer to the transition point, so they're more unique. So there is this interplay between similarity that's quite dominant, but this also this uniqueness of the training point in the data set. So we were actually pretty happy with this plot. I mean, they show how you can gain some trust in what in the predictions of your model, but also maybe tell you something about order parameter. We don't claim absolutely that we can give a formula or something like this, but this can give you some guess. Okay, so this is probably something that is zero here and then growing slowly up in the Chernensky wave one phase. And also with the notion of similarity, you can gain additional insight of what patterns machine learning takes into account. So another setup that we did was we used so-called transfer learning. So this is a situation when you train a machine on one data coming from one domain and test it on the data from different domains. So in our case, we trained it on the same transition as before. So it's the same model as before, but now the test points are coming from a different transition line. So it's still the one that crosses the Luttinger liquid and charge density wave one, but it has a non-zero next nearest neighbor interaction. So they are a little different, and also the phase transition there is shifted towards bigger values of nearest neighbor interactions due to non-zero next nearest neighbor interaction. So what we should see actually, and I mean, if the model is trained correctly. So when we take the points from the test points from the phase from the Luttinger liquid, now you see that this background indicates the phase transition for this arrow number two. So this transition with a non-zero next nearest neighbor interaction. When we take from this part, still the ones that are most so we repeat the behavior from the previous plot, but still we see that that the order parameter or something connected to order parameter is dominant here. So it's not like machine learned and some, it's not a mapping to, let's say, interaction or anything else, because here this point still this most similar ones are the training points from the arrow number one, but still on the correct phase. And again, here we have even bigger tendency to the left due to this shifted phase transition. So this was really this we results we like too. Okay, but now comes my favorite result. And so now we study the transition line through three phases. So Luttinger liquid, bond order, and the charge density wave two. So this is this arrow. So it starts in Luttinger liquid, and with the growing next nearest neighbor interaction, it crosses additional two phases. There are two order parameters governing these transitions. One is this is similar as in the previous case, but with different patterns, so 1100. So it's still, we are looking at the average difference between densities. And the other is this bond order parameter. So effective staggering, we look at this effective staggering of the hopping between sites. So two order parameters. And okay, now one super important message here. So we lied to the machine here. So in the AB subplots, even though all these training points, they come from Luttinger liquid, bond order, and shared density wave two, and here as well, we told the machine that there are just two phases. So we said that, okay, Luttinger liquid is a, so in this setup, AB, we said, okay, Luttinger liquid is a phase zero, and all this is a phase one. So we didn't say anything about the existence of bond order in between some phases. And what we love to see, this similarity regions occurred. So influence functions said, okay, this one's still the most harmful for that. This is still zero, so this is exactly what we see. But these points, they have different influence function values for these predictions. So in such sense, it can also detect unknown phases, or it can see if we label the states maybe in a wrong way, right? And so this is one thing. And the other thing, here we did the opposite thing. So we said that these two, the Luttinger liquid and bond order, they belong to phase zero, while the charge density wave two belongs to phase one. So we again lied to the machine. And this is a really nice example of what we don't want to see. So this is like a sign of overfitting. So this tool can also show you, that your predictions maybe don't really make sense and the training didn't really go nicely, at least in this setup it didn't go well, and we wanted to leave it as a like example how it can help with the judging the training quality, right? And the final, just like additional slide, it wasn't in the publication, but this is also nice way of checking whether you have some outliers in the data set. So this is a very similar pictures as before, not so fancy because it didn't reach the publication. But what you see, there are these three patterns because there are three phases. This time we didn't lie to the machine. But what we see here, there are single points that are really like detached from other patterns. Of here and here and here. And it was one of the like first free phase trainings in our project. And it turned out that all these points, they had a different global sign than the others. So this was random numerically what global sign will come up out of simulations. And it turned out that most of them were randomly positive, and these ones were all negative. So with this, you can see whether, first of all, you have some quality in the data that machine maybe don't grasp, but it's not relevant for the problem. And secondly, you can see whether maybe you did some mistakes where labeling the data. So the conclusion is that we believe that I think I said that it's not our tool. Just so this is the series of work starting from 70s that resulted in this tool. But we'd like to convince you that it's a useful tool and maybe use it in face classification problems. But it's pretty simple, apart from some technical tricks, but they're well described. And we do believe that this interpretability is really needed, especially in science. So I hope I convinced you that the influence functions can be a tool to guide the search for unknown order parameters by this notion of similarity and uniqueness. Maybe they can be used in many body localization, topological models. Maybe we can judge why machine learning fails. We can see what patterns they see as similar and influential and see maybe what's the problem there exactly. This interpretable neural network then can detect unknown phases. Like once when I said that we lied to the machine, we said there are two phases and it saw the third one in between. And it's also a tool to detect outliers and judge the quality of the training. For the outlooks, we kind of believe that it may be able to distinguish between types of phase transition, that maybe the curvature of the influence functions value will be different for the first order, second order phase transition. And maybe it would be a useful tool to classify experimental data. Maybe it will see whether noise is important to the machine, and well, it shouldn't. And then we see that it doesn't generalize very well. So thanks a lot for your attention. I hope you, I convinced you a little about the need of interpretability in science. And there is an archive link for our paper and the code sample that allows you to reproduce this first figure. In total it's available. So you can play with that and see by yourself that it works. So thanks a lot.
Okay, thanks a lot, Anna. Thank you, Anna. This nice talk. So I really like the style of your slides, and I will steal some of your pictures, so they convey the information so well. Is anyone prepared to ask some questions? Okay, I have a lot of questions.
Go ahead.
So, if you do this leaf one out training, you need to train your neural network a lot of times, right?
Yep.
So that in principle that takes a lot of time to go through all of the training data points, and so if you leave each training data point out and you have 1,000 training data points, you need to train your network 1,000 times.
Yes, I absolutely agree. That's why the influence function is just an approximation for this leave one out training. We don't need to. So the most computational hard is to compute the Hessian for this single point. But yes, this is exactly why it's not feasible for new networks. But as a first step of this project, I was comparing whether it really corresponds to one out training, and it does. So, I mean. Value of the influence function isn't important. Yeah. Like how the value within, like the relative values, are important. So this is what we know.
So that means for your version, for your approximation, you only need to train once.
Yes.
Okay. Nice. That is cool.
Yeah.
Another question is so. Can you show me the picture of some influence functions again, like these bases and different? Yeah, for example, these. So sometimes you don't know the labels of your phases close to the phase transition, especially if when you don't know where a phase transition are and you use neural network to find a phase transition. So you don't have access to the formation of the training points that are close to the transition point, but as we see here, these are the ones that are also have are the most harmful or the most helpful examples. And it could be that your training examples are in these flat regimes. So what would happen then?
Okay. And last part with flat regime, was it? Can you repeat?
I was just saying that if you don't have access to training data close to the phase transition, then your training data might be in one of the flat regimes.
Okay, so I can first write the specific plots, and then I can try to be more general. So here we have a zero-ish, 0 meter, then there's growing slowly to one. So here actually, we had a problem with, so the choice of the phase transition point is a little bit arbitrary here, because like what zero is not zero anymore in numerics, right? So, but what I strongly believe that if we put it closer to one, but I mean the threshold that we pick, it would still result in the same behavior up to a point. So it's still the ones that are the most different, but at the same label would be most helpful because they provide the most, the biggest number of information, amount of information. And the ones that are the most similar, but on the other side would be the most harmful, except for like maybe on this other side where we have a strong saturation, because then they're all states are the same. So I believe it's not a big problem. Up until the point where we really messed up with the phase transition point. So, but with this, I believe it would be visible with influence function. So imagine we are really far away, and if the points from the same phase would be very different from this prediction point, I believe they would be harmful, like in this case, right? So we are super far in the phase, super deep in the phase of the charge density wave. And the things that, the points that are helpful are ones that are very similar, and the harmful are ones that are super different because they are much more similar to looting the liquid due to this arbitrarily transition point, and are on the same side of the phase transition. So I think you would even maybe see that, but we didn't play with that too much. So do you agree or?
I don't know if I agree. I need to play with this. I don't have a feeling.
Yeah, but I mean, I believe that when we still like not super, when you don't see a very big difference between this neighboring occupancy, the behavior will be exactly the same up until the point yeah. where you yeah, put it really too far. And then I think this behavior would happen. So when you're deep in the face, one pretty close to it would be green, and then close to the transition would be red. This would be my intuition behind it.
Yeah.
Actually, Alex, do you agree?
Yes, I agree.
Okay. And it was short, actually.
Someone else having a question? Okay, I can ask one more philosophical question, not philosophical, but a more broad question. So you had this comment, and I think I agree with that neural networks can predict the phases more accurately with less samples and thus less computational costs.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, that is what you said in one of the slides, right?
Yeah, in the beginning. Then conventional methods.
Yeah, and conventional methods mean evaluating the order parameter on some of the samples and plotting them with respect to the temperature.
Mm-hmm.
Probably, I think.
Yeah.
Which I mean, in this paper, it's disorder, no? So that's also why, because this is for many body localization.
Yeah.
And then.
So
on the system, right? Because Ising model, for example, I mean, it's tough to say how to compare with the conventional methods when we already know the order parameter, right?
So that's one side, but my question would be in a different mm-hmm. direction. And so this question is not just for you, but this is in general. If a neural network is more accurate with less samples, the neural network needs to learn more than what conventional methods do. So if the neural network would just learn the order parameter, then the neural network could not be more accurate than conventional order parameter evaluation on your samples. So the neural network needs to learn something more.
I'm not super sure about that. I mean, I would love to say yes, because then it's an extra argument of doing machine learning in science. But
so I have these two hints. One is from my experiments where I found
that
they find the energy, which means next to nearest neighbor correlations, which would help, especially when you have domain walls. Like, for example, mm-hmm. imagine a sample of an Ising model where half of the spins point up, half of the spins point down, like on the right, like one is half of the spins point up on the right side, half of the spins point down on the left side. And the magnetization would be zero, but this would be a low temperature configuration.
This is a good high temperature configuration.
And it's also when I remember the first SVM paper, like Pedro Ponte's paper, he also showed that in the support vector machine decision function. So I think he did not say that, but from his pictures, I would infer that his support vector machine learns more than just the order parameter. So some kinds of additional correlations that we humans do not normally use to calculate phase boundaries.
Hmm. I need to think about that. I really like what you're saying.
I don't know.
Because I wouldn't say that for the fact that they can learn the phase energy point from the smaller amount of samples, that proves that it learns more than other parameter. I think it can be also about, you know, like numerical proficiency or whatever, like, but yeah, you made two good points. So
I think it also depends on the distribution of data or the structure of data. I mean, imagine like a frustrated system, a sign problematic system. If you are learning, I imagine, from a range of configuration where you have a given sign structure, I don't expect you to generalize well, right? So it really depends on, I mean, how your data, I mean, the underlying structure of the data you're looking at, that's the feeling you have to make a general statement.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, any more questions?
So I have a question. You mentioned about your approach being kind of generic to any kind of machine learning models. So did you try something different than CNNs?
You mean like different architecture of CNN?
I mean, not just CNN.
Not CNN. Okay, no. So actually, okay, so I was trying on various types of neural networks. So let's say, the super simple one, the logistic regression, let's say that it's a simple network, then for the connected one and the convolutional neural network, and it worked up until, of course, the point of the capacity of this network, whether they learned the problem. But we want to try it on other models as well. But no, we haven't tried. But from this, let's say, intuition behind the how it works, all we need is to have a loss landscape. We want to be in one of the minima in this landscape. The Hessian in this point, so the curvature around this point, and have a prediction. So I don't see why it wouldn't be general, but I'm looking forward to any problematic stuff I will meet when doing it with other models. But I mean, I don't see any reason why it wouldn't be general. And also, the authors also claim that it's general. But I haven't seen any research done on any other model. However, it's probably also because the neural networks are considered as the most complex and the least interpretable. So maybe that's why it was restricted to that.
I see. Maybe a last question on the ResNet paper. Do you know whether they computed the Hessian exactly or they used some approximation? Because I could imagine that with the ResNet, you have a lot of parameters. Probably have a very, like, huge.
Yeah. So it's a great point. There was a hidden computational problem in there. And the answer is, so also these authors, Koch and Liang, they proposed one of the... So there are many schemes to compute the Hessian approximately. And what I was playing with is stochastic approximation of the Hessian. And this plot I was able to reconstruct perfectly with stochastically approximated Hessian. However, it's long. So because of the how long, because it takes like, you know, a few hours on my computer. So because how long it is, we decided to use this pretty small one-dimensional model so we can compute Hessian exactly. So this was also the reason why we chose this model with many pooling layers.
And how many parameters you have with this model?
I think it's 720.
Oh, okay.
So pretty small.
Yeah, okay, thanks.
Who can ask a question? Let's say I can choose one.
You can choose one for what?
No, to ask a question. I won't.
Okay. Oh, okay. No, don't do that.
let's thank Anna again.
Thanks.
Yeah. Thanks a lot. Yeah,
really. Thanks for inviting me and thanks for great questions. The argument about the machine learning more than order parameter, I really like it. I need to think about that and add it in my papers.
Which is a good thing because that means that in principle, we can be, instead of just finding a new phase, we would be able to make predictions on other models where previous predictions are less accurate.
Again, so that we able to.
So normally, what we have done is we have.
Oh yeah, I understand. Okay, so your training data are the ones from the Gworth model. Okay.
Yeah.